Episode 89. And just before the dawn, the billowing clouds tell of the fierce fires in the east, and I watch from the edge of the cove. Greetings and welcome in to the Patuxent General. This week it's tricks and treats. Everything is switched. The cocktail is a horrible story about drinking after you are dead, and the recipe is the sweetest treat of all. If you bring these to a holiday party, you win. Tea Time Tasties, which are tiny pecan pies, only better. And this week, we start reading The Fall of the House of Usher. For those of us interested in the original version, while adoring the current one. So happy Halloween, my lovelies. We have a very special treat for you this week. Buckle up. But first, I must thank our Patreon subscribers. These folks hunt out the EMPs, the cryptid's footprints, record the UFOs, and visualize the house's haunt that is the investigative paranormal force that is the Patuxent General, without whom I am an unobserved ghost. If you would like to be one of these folks who hunts spirits, simply follow the links in the show notes, or go to patreon.com and look for our page. Every donation counts and adds to the content, not only for you as a subscriber, but everyone as we expand. So thank you. It was usual around the holidays when I was growing up to put my busy fingers to work in the kitchen. This gave me great opportunities to learn all the tricks and recipes, or scoff a few of my favorites. Tea Time Tasties were my favorite, and hard to get away with because everyone loved them, so they were counted. This is the name that I knew them by, but as I've learned, the true name is either Tea Time Tassies or Pecan Tassies. The Scots call them tassies, which means miniature cup, from the French la tasse. They are a tiny pecan tart made from a cream cheese butter crust and a pecan pie type filling. Pecan pies first came on the scene in 1886 in Harper's Bazaar. This is after an innovation in 1846 at Oak Alley Plantation by a man named Antoine. He developed a method of grafting the pecan trees that averaged their flavor. Often trees had both bitter and sweet pecans, but Antoine's were all good. In fact, they won Best Pecan at the Philadelphia Centennial Exposition, which exploded the popularity of pecans, not only in the U.S., but around the world. Pecan trees themselves are social in that they need other trees to pollinate, so the more pecan trees you have, the more pecans you have. And that is where the pies came from, and the traditional recipe is delicious. During the 1930s, Carol Syrup put a pecan pie recipe on their jar, and it just took off. Well, as you know, that stuff is just no good for you. When I make pecan pie, I use a combination of maple syrup, molasses, and honey to make up the consistency, and it works every time. But today, let's make pecan tassies. For these, you will need small muffin tins, 1 cup of softened unsalted butter, 6 ounces of softened cream cheese, 2 cups of flour, 1.5 cups of pecans, chopped, 2 teaspoons of vanilla, 3 eggs, 1.5 cups brown sugar, and 1/2 tablespoon melted butter, and a pinch of salt. First, preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Combine the softened butter and cream cheese together, then add 2 cups of flour. Pull together into a ball and let rest for 30 minutes. Then, using a small scoop, scoop out about a tablespoon of dough and shape it into a ball. Put 1 ball into each muffin spot. Pop those in your refrigerator for 30 minutes, then you are ready to fill. In a separate bowl, mix together the brown sugar, melted butter, eggs, vanilla, and salt. When it is well combined, add the pecans and mix together. Then take the balls out of the fridge and press down with your thumb to make a divot. Then drop 1 tablespoon of filling into each. Be careful not to overfill the tassies, or they'll stick to the pan. Bake for 20 minutes. Remove from the pans after they've cooled for 10 minutes. They're supposed to be served cold, but I always ate them warm. You should too. Enjoy. In an attempt to do a Halloween edition of Disturbing Drinks of the Past, I bring you the story of drinking after death and the end of John Shaw. At 1:30 in the morning on April 8th, 1905, two unfortunate men walked into Winslow's Wigwam Saloon, William Smith and John Shaw. They ordered drinks, but before they could drink them, the lure of a pile of money on the late-night dice table was too much. They robbed the table of $271 and fled out the door. It was dark. They were fleeing. I'm sure their tensions were high, because none of them noticed that they left a scattering of stolen coins near the railroad station. For two such adept lawmen as Navajo County Sheriff Chet Hoek and Deputy Pete Pemberton, it was clear as an arrow, and they tracked Shaw and Smith to Canyon Diablo, 25 miles west of Winslow. The deadly part of this story takes place in a flash. Shaw and Smith happened to be walking up to the trading post while Hoek and Pemberton were questioning Fred Voltz, the trading post operator, about the duo. Hoek yelled out to the approaching Shaw to yield to be searched, to which Shaw replied, "No one searches us," and pulled his gun. The men stood only 4 feet apart when the firefight began, Hoek's hand being burnt by the powder from Shaw's gun. 21 shots were fired in all. Hoek's coat was shot. Then Smith with a solid blow. Pemberton was grazed. But when Shaw was reloading, he saw Smith fall and hesitated. Just long enough for Pete Pemberton, with his last bullet in his gun, to shoot John Shaw in the head, the wound that killed him. And while Voltz prepared the body and the rest took Smith to the hospital, the word got around. And when the details reached the Wigwam Saloon, cowboys from a northern Arizona cattle outfit called the Hash Knife were there to hear it. These hardened men had had their own troubles with the law and were not pleased to hear that the unlucky, if ill-behaved man never got to drink the last drink he paid for. That he was buried in a shallow grave without that last shot of solace vexed them, infuriated them, and made them determined. 20 of them made the trip to Canyon Diablo. I'm not sure when they solidified their plan. However, they borrowed shovels from the railway when they arrived. Armed with shovels and whiskey bottles, they awoke Fred Voltz. And there is one version of the story that says he lent them the shovels. There is one thing for sure, though. Even though he was awoken from a dead sleep, he had the presence of mind to lend them his box camera, saying that the sheriff would want documentation in case of a reward. I suspect 20 angry, drunken cowboys wanted a Kodak box camera, and he just said yes. A cowboy in attendance said that after that, quote, "we stopped at the depot and had a few more drinks, and then we went and dug the grave open with our shovels." John Shaw had a crooked grin on his face when they opened the box, and they reported he was, quote, "looking very natural, his head not busted open," unquote. Everyone in attendance was overcome with emotion and whiskey. Perhaps that is why they took it upon themselves to remove poor John from his grave, stand him up with them, and while they drank their bottles, take pictures of the scene. J.D. Rogers, the Hash Knife's wagon boss, was quoted as saying, "Let's get him out, let's give him a drink, put him away proper. Someone can say a prayer, which wasn't done when they shoved him into that hole." They did, in fact, lean him up against the picket fence, pour the drink into his mouth, and take photos. Was that what James Joyce was thinking of when writing Finnegan's Wake years later? The belief that whiskey as the drink to usher your soul to the next realm. Perhaps that is why at dawn they placed the bottle he drank from back into the coffin with him to hopefully rest quietly. But that is not the end of this bizarre tale. William Smith recovered from his injury, was convicted of the wigwam robbery, and served his time in Yuma prison. In a strange twist of fate, Pete Pemberton, the deputy who shot Shaw, shot Marshal Joe Giles and was also sent to Yuma for his murder over gambling losses. Wonder what they may have talked about. But what about the pictures, you say? Well, in total, 6 pictures were taken. Volz, the owner of the camera, unloaded the film and gave it to a man named Cresswell to return to Sheriff Hoek in Winslow. Unfortunately, the man was waylaid by Sam Case, who stole the pictures. It took over a month for the photos to reach Judge Burbridge. After that, they were not seen until published in 1965 in an issue of Arizona Highways magazine. 4 photos still exist at the Arizona Historical Society. The other photos are missing at this time. This Halloween season, I raise a glass of whiskey, whether he deserved it or not, to John Shaw, for drinking after death. This just in. The most exciting time of the year is upon us at the Edgewood Congregational Church, the annual Holiday Bazaar. November 18th, 2023, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. This year is bigger than ever. Lydia's Closet, the thrift store, has been collecting all sorts of really useful items, stunning jewelry, clothing, and that's just them. We are filled to the brim with vendors, food vendors you may recognize from the farmer's market. The Patuxent General itself will be chock full of pies to sell. The bazaar will have games for the kids and pinball from Electromagnetic Pinball Museum and Restoration. Come join us November 18th, 2023, from 9 a.m. till 2 p.m. I'll meet you there.
I want to tell you about my friend Mike and his Electromagnetic Pinball Museum and Restoration Arcade. It's an all-inclusive place to relax and share anything related to modern pinball, EM pinball, and arcade games. A group of pinball and arcade fans with an addiction to games of all kinds and Lego too. $10 gets you free play on pinball and arcade games all day. You can find them at 881 Main Street, Pawtucket, Rhode Island, or online at www.electromagneticpinballmuseum.com.
This week in our House on the Corner series, we start the continuing reading of The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe. Part 1. It was a dark and soundless day near the end of the year, and the clouds were hanging low in the heavens. All day I had been riding on horseback through the country with little life or beauty, and in the early evening I came within view of the House of Usher.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
I do not know how it was, but with my first sight of the building, a sense of heavy sadness filled my spirit. I looked at the scene before me, at the house itself, at the ground around it, at the cold stone walls of the building, at its empty eye-like windows, at a few dead trees. I looked at this scene, I say, with a complete sadness of soul, which was no healthy, earthly feeling. There was a coldness, a sickening of the heart, in which I could discover nothing to lighten the weight I felt. What was it, I asked myself, what was it that was so fearful, so frightening in my view of the House of Usher? This was a question to which I could find no answer. I stopped my horse beside the building, on the edge of a dark and quiet lake. There I could see reflected in the water a clear picture of the dead trees of the house and its empty eye-like windows. I was now going to spend several weeks in this house of sadness, this house of gloom. Its owner was named Roderick Usher. We had been friends when we were boys, but many years had passed since our last meeting. A letter from him had reached me, a wild letter which demanded that I reply by coming to see him. He wrote of an illness of the body, of a sickness of the mind, of a desire to see me, his best and indeed his only friend. It was the manner in which all this was said, it was the heart in it, which did not allow me to say no. And although, as boys, we had been together, I really knew little about my friend. I knew, however, that his family was a very old one, had long been famous for its understanding of all the arts, and for many quiet acts of kindness to the poor. I had learned, too, that the family had never been a large one, with many branches. The name had always passed from father to son, and when people spoke of the House of Usher, they included both the family and the family home. I again looked up from the picture of the house reflected in the lake to the house itself. A strange idea grew in my mind, an idea so strange that I tell it only to show the force of the feelings which laid their weight on me. I really believed that around the whole house and the ground around it, the air was different. It was not the air of heaven. It rose from the dead, decaying trees, from the gray walls, from the quiet lake. It was a sickly, unhealthy air that I could see, slow-moving, heavy, and gray. Shaking off from my spirit what must have been a dream, I looked more carefully at the building itself. The most noticeable thing about it seemed to be its great age. None of the walls had fallen, yet the stones appeared to be in a condition of advanced decay. Perhaps the careful eye would have discovered the beginning of a break in the front of the building, a crack making its way from the top down of the wall until it became lost in the dark waters of the lake. I rode over a short bridge to the house. A man who worked in the house, a servant, took my horse, and I entered. Another servant, of quiet step, led me without a word through many dark turnings to the room of his master. Much that I met on the way added, I do not know how, to the strangeness of which I have already spoken. While the objects around me, the dark wall coverings, the blackness of the floors, the things brought home from long-forgotten wars, while these things were not like the things I had known since I was a baby, while I admitted that all this was only what I had expected, I was still surprised at the strange ideas which grew in my mind from these simple things. The room I came into was very large and high. The windows were high and pointed at the top, and so far above the black floor, they were quite out of reach. Only a little light, red in color, made its way through the glass and served to lighten the nearer and larger objects. My eyes, however, tried and failed to see into the far high corners of the room. Dark coverings hung over the walls. The many chairs and tables had been used for a long, long time. Books lay around the room, but could give it no sense of life. I felt sadness hanging over everything. No escape from this deep, cold gloom seemed possible. As I entered the room, Usher stood up from where he had been lying and met me with a warmth which at first I could not believe was real. A look, however, at his face told me that every word he spoke was true. We sat down, and for some moments, while he said nothing, I looked at him with a feeling of sad surprise. Surely no man had ever before changed as Roderick Usher had. Could this be my friend of early years? It is true that his face had always been unusual. He had gray-white skin, eyes large and full of light, lips not bright in color, but of a beautiful shape, a well-shaped nose, hair of great softness, a face that was not easy to forget. And now, the increase in the strangeness of his face had caused so great a change that I almost did not know him. The horrible white of his skin and the strange light in his eyes surprised me and even made me afraid. His hair had been allowed to grow, and in its softness It did not fall around his face, but seemed to lie upon the air. I could not, even with an effort, see in my friend the appearance of a simple human being. In his manner, I saw at once changes came and went, and I soon found that this resulted from his attempt to quiet a very great nervousness. I had indeed been prepared for something like this, partly by his letter, and partly by remembering him as a boy. His actions were first too quick and then too quiet. Sometimes his voice, slow and trembling with fear, quickly changed to a strong, heavy, carefully spaced, too perfectly controlled manner. It was in this manner that he spoke of the purpose of my visit, of his desire to see me, and of the deep delight and strength he expected me to give him. He told me what he believed to be the nature of his illness. It was, he said, a family sickness, and one from which he could not hope to grow better. But it was, he added at once, only a nervous illness, which he would without doubt soon pass away. It showed itself in a number of strange feelings. Some of these, as he told me of them, interested me but were beyond my understanding. Perhaps the way in which he told me of them added to their strangeness. He suffered much from a sickly increase to the feeling of all the senses. He could eat only the most tasteless food. All flowers smelled too strongly for his nose. His eyes were hurt by even a little light, and there were few sounds which did not fill him with horror. A certain kind of sick fear was completely his master. "I shall die," he said. "I shall die. I must die of this fool's sickness. In this way and no other, I shall be lost. I fear what will happen in the future. Not for what happens, but for the result of what happens. I have indeed no fear of pain, but only fear of its result, of terror. I feel that the time will soon arrive when I must lose my life and my mind and my soul together in some last battle with that horrible enemy, fear." Thank you once again for joining us today at the Patuxent General. If you'd like to reach out with a local ghost story, recipe, or question, our email is jess@patuxentgeneral.com. Please reach out. We can't wait to hear from you. We'll get back to you as soon as possible. But until then, I'll meet you right back here next time at the Patuxent General. A Something for Posterity production, pre-recorded in Patuxent.